This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station. Ringgit and Sense on BFM 89.9. The business station.
BFM 89.9. Good morning. I'm Roshan Kanasan, and you're listening to Ringgit and Sense, the show that's all about personal finance. Now, with the start of the new year, with 2020, a lot of us are asking ourselves, how can we do better in our personal finances? Not just for this year, but for the next decade. And to help me explore this topic, I have in the studio with me Rajan David Dasan, licensed financial planner with Manulife Investment Management in Malaysia Berhad, and CEO of RD Wealth Creation. Welcome back to the show, Rajan. And Happy New Year.
Hi, Roshan. Happy New Year. Both conventional New Year, a bit late, and early Gongzi Fa Jai.
Yes. Chinese New Year is around the corner at this point. And let's hope we get some Ong advice to everyone out there to maybe put that Chinese New Year money in the right places this year. Now, Rajan, if I'm not mistaken, you have a financial blueprint plan. Could you take us through that?
Sure. I've been talking and writing about it for years, and I shamelessly call it the Rajan David Dasan Blueprint for Financial Freedom, which is something that anyone can Google because there are enough entries out there.
I mean, it's straight to the point. You know, this is Rajan David Dasan's plan to getting you to financial freedom.
Absolutely, yeah. And, apart from brand building, one of the reasons that I named it as such is because, to the best of my knowledge, it's never been put together in quite this manner before. So for most of us, our greatest asset is our capacity to earn money. We have to turn up for work to earn our salary, or if we're running a business, we have to turn up in the business. So right now, I'm not talking about, you know, big-time entrepreneurs who've got multiple things running and they've got other people doing the work for them. I'm talking about the real business where the guy who fries jia kui tiao and those who sell chendol and those of us who provide face-to-face consulting services. It's the actively run business income. So all of this comes under the category of active income. And each of us needs to grow our active income. If you're very young, the best way to continue to grow your active income is to work harder and harder and harder. I think each of us, if we're very serious about doing well in our careers, we need to quickly decide and maybe even make it a written goal to become the hardest working individual in our organization. And as you age, you want to start moving from just working harder to working harder and smarter. And I think for most people who are over the age of 45, you're not going to be able to compete against the youngsters who are in the early 20s, mid-20s, in terms of just intensity of work. But you do have experience under your belt. And in that case, you need to work smarter. So you want to build your active income. And one of the best ways to do that is to allocate perhaps up to 3%, not up to 3%, at least 3% of your monthly net income in investing in yourself. Money that you set aside to buy books in your particular field, trade journals in your field. Don't wait for your company to send you for training, whether it be specific to your career or whether it just be, you know, soft skills, time management, goal setting, things like that, or even personal finance. Be willing to pay for these things yourself. So you want to grow your active income. That flows through. And from that active income, you decide how much you want to spend on your lifestyle choices. I call this quantum operational expenses. Now, we could have some people... So for simplicity, let's assume that we're talking about a 37-year-old earning 72,000 a year, so 6,000 per month. After deductions, we're probably looking at 5,000 plus. So let's work with 5,000. Active income coming in, 5,000. And let's say you've got a whole bunch of peers in that category. You will have some who bring in 5,000 and spend 5,000 operational expenses based on their lifestyle choices. There will be some who bring in 5,000 and spend 6,000, plenty actually. And that funding differential is taken care of by increasing debt or selling stuff. By selling stuff, I mean running down your cash balances in the bank and elsewhere. And you also would have people earning 5,000 who actually spend 4,000 or 3,000 or whatever else. So let me ask you, Roshan, in your opinion, which should be larger, your monthly active income or your monthly operational expenses?
Oh, for sure, your monthly active income.
Absolutely. And so hopefully, after you've paid for your operational expenses, and frankly, this requires setting a budget, thinking through what's important to you, And I'm not saying that everyone needs to sacrifice and tighten the belt all the time. Life is to be enjoyed. But, you know, statistically speaking, the biggest risk that we have, you know, as we age, as we go through our 20s, 30s, 40s, 50s, 60s, and then maybe look at retirement in the 60s or 70s onward, the biggest risk in retirement is actually the longevity risk, where we end up with more life than money. It's a terrifying thought. And that's why personal responsibility is very important. And it is important to actually exercise some level of delayed gratification. And that's where you choose to lower your operational expenses. So say you have a choice of pitching your monthly expenses at 4,005 or 4,002 or 4,000 or 3,005. A listener may say, 3,005 is too tight. I don't want to live like that. I want to enjoy a bit of my life right now. Fine. But whatever it is, you should still have some money after paying for your operational expenses. That excess flow should then go toward paying down the regular payments on your portfolio of debt. Housing, car, credit card, also personal loans, because the banks have become very aggressive at marketing these things because they are high margin products. So portfolio debt, manage it well. For those listening who feel like they're dying under this massive burden of debt, one of the best things you can actually do is to list all your liabilities and to then redo it twice. List them again. First, look at all your loan agreements and work out what your APR or annualized percentage rate is on a typical loan. Whatever is quoted on your mortgage will be correct. But if you have a loan, let's like say a car loan that you think is only costing you 3%, you have to understand that the way the hire purchase law is structured in Malaysia, when a bank quotes a 3% charge, the APR is typically double that. It's about 6%.
Yeah, Rajan, could you break down the math behind that?
They say someone borrows 100,000 ringgit for a car. It's a five-year loan. And what the bank does is it takes the 3% quoted rate, multiplies by 5, so you got 15% total interest. You then take 1.15 and multiply by 100 ringgit. That means you've got 115,000 ringgit. You divide that by 60 months, and that's your steady payment. But if you stop and think about it, you borrowed 100,000 ringgit at the beginning of the loan tenure. And at the end of the loan tenure, you've paid it off and therefore your loan amount is zero. Therefore, over that full year, the average amount that is owed, the average amount of capital that you're utilizing, bank capital you're utilizing, is 100 plus zero divided by 2, so it's 50,000. But you're still being charged 3% on 100,000. Therefore, your APR, if I haven't blown people's minds, is about double that. It's about 6%. So rank everything from highest interest rate to lowest, meet all your minimum payments, and then see whether you can squeeze out a little bit of extra cash each month to target your loans. Now, that is mathematically most efficient. But my preferred strategy is actually not high to low, not high interest to low interest, but actually small to big, where you look at your master list of debts, but you then relist everything from smallest debt to largest debt. And then you meet all minimum payments, and then you take your little bit of squeezed out excess and you target the smallest loan. Because it is the smallest loan, it gets cleared off quickly. Once you've cleared it, you have this tremendous feeling of satisfaction. And then you take the minimum payment on that smallest loan plus the excess that you were paying earlier, and you use that to attack. And I use that term very, very intentionally. You attack your second largest loan, second smallest loan, and hopefully you get that cleared, and then you cascade down. So I call this the small to large strategy. It is psychologically most effective.
It's about essentially building momentum and getting those successes under your belt.
Like, absolutely.
Oh, I believe I can kill this debt in time.
Absolutely. The whole thing. The radio talk show, Dave Ramsey, he actually calls this particular strategy, what I call small to big, the debt snowball, which is a very cool term.
Yes, and we're going to continue this discussion in just a little bit. We've still got a few more steps to complete this plan, and we still need to talk about savings, investment, and finally, how you get to financial freedom. You're listening to Ringgit and Sense, the show that's all about personal finance. Stay tuned.
Ringgit and Sense on BFM 89.9. The Business Station.
BFM 89.9, welcome back to Ringgit and Sense, the show that's all about personal finance. In studio with me this morning is Rajan Devadasan, licensed financial planner with Manulife Investment Management Malaysia Berhad and CEO of RD Wealth Creation. So Rajan, we've covered a few steps already. We've covered active income and debt payments and operational expenses. What's next?
Now, after you've paid your monthly payments on your portfolio of debt, and you've also hopefully squeeze out a little bit extra so you're accelerating. Hopefully, you still have some money left over. And you should flow that money into building your savings, cash savings, not investment. Save first. Always save before you invest. Always save before you invest. There wasn't a glitch there. It was intentional repetition. And so for people who are conventionally employed, they're salaried workers, they get paid once a month, I would recommend that they have an emergency buffer between 3 and 6 months of their expenses, not their income, but their expenses. And if you think about it, their regular monthly expenses comprise their monthly operational expenses plus their regular payments on their portfolio of debt. And for people who are self-employed, who run their own business, I would recommend an emergency buffer of between 6 and 12 months expenses. It takes a long time to build up a buffer, whether it be a 3-month buffer or 5-month buffer or a 10-month buffer or a 12-month buffer. So for everybody, whether you're conventionally employed or self-employed, I recommend staying focused, build your active income, keep your operational expenses under control, intelligently deal with your portfolio of debt, get your emergency buffer at least up to the first 2 months, because if you lose your job, it'll take you a minimum 1 month to find another job. And, unless you're like a high-flying banker where they give you a signing bonus, you actually would need to wait till the end of the month to be paid. So that's why 2 months is absolute minimum. So let's say someone is targeting a 5-month buffer, has already built up the 2 months. After that, I think you can actually split the excess cash flow so that the emergency buffer between having 2 months expenses and 5 months expenses builds up more slowly. But the excess cash, you then flow into what I would like to call your portfolio of wealth. And the goal of your portfolio of wealth, and remember, I started the blueprint talking about active income. So just for the sake of symmetry, what do you think will be the last element of my blueprint?
Passive income.
Absolutely right. And the goal of building your portfolio of wealth is to generate passive income. And typically, I will talk to my clients and I will encourage them to build 4 types of passive income: interest from bank savings, dividends from stock investments, rental from brick and mortar rental property or indirect rental, which comes from direct REITs that they may own, real estate investment trusts, or funds that they may have that are REIT funds. And then for those who are invested in unit trusts, you can keep building and you can reinvest your distributions. But when you move toward retirement, you can actually speak to your unit trust advisor or your financial planner and get the distributions paid out on a regular basis. So you're literally creating a personal pension for yourself. So you've got passive income. Now, the last bit of the blueprint is this. It's called the Rajan Devadasan Blueprint for Financial Freedom. So there's no point wittering on about a whole bunch of things without saying, okay, what is financial freedom? In my book, I would say a person achieves financial freedom when this formula is met. It's PI greater than OE plus RPOPOD. All it means is you achieve financial freedom when your passive income is greater than your operational expenses plus your regular payments on your portfolio of debt. You achieve financial freedom when your regular, more or less, monthly passive income is greater than your monthly operational expenses and your monthly regular payments on your portfolio of debt. Because if you think about it, once you reach that point, if you hate your job, you can say sayonara. But hopefully you don't hate your job. Hopefully you love your work and you will continue to do that and you will continue to build. And that creates extra margin for generosity, for living better, traveling better. I mean, I don't know about you, but I would much rather fly business class than economy. I'd much rather fly first class than business. But a lot of people who can afford business and first class would say, well, you know, it's a waste of money. I don't want to do it. And that's fine. But there are lots of people who would say, oh, if I had the money and if it doesn't destroy me financially, I'd love it. Almost everyone I talk to would like to travel more. We live in a wonderful country. It's not perfect, but it's a wonderful country where you can go out and have really nice meals and they're not terribly expensive. But there are some really fancy restaurants in Malaysia as well. It would be nice to be able to go into one of those and not literally have to look at the menu and figure out, okay, price is on the right-hand side. Can I afford this? To walk in and just focus on the left. And what do I want? Price is immaterial. It's kind of nice. But it usually, for most people, unless they're born with a silver spoon in their mouths, for most people, it means that they sacrifice first. They manage their money well. And they should try and at least, not necessarily achieve financial freedom straight away, but at least be on a trajectory to get there.
Yeah, and basically, this financial freedom is when things like your rental income, your dividend income, all this passive income, the inflow from that is more than the outflow from your debt payments, from your operational expenditure.
Yes, spot on.
And this is not even looking at your active income.
That's right.
And that's when your capital is essentially working for you. It's a very Robert Kiyosaki, I think.
To some extent, yes. Yeah. I've learned a lot from him. It's interesting that you mentioned Kiyosaki because the American radio talk show host I was talking about, Dave Ramsey, his approach, I've never heard Kiyosaki refer to Ramsey. I've never heard Ramsey refer to Kiyosaki. But they seem to come... They basically inhabit, in my mind at least, opposite ends of the arena.
And maybe that's something we can cover the next time you're in studio with us. Perspectives on debt elimination from Dave Ramsey and Robert Kiyosaki. But until then, Rajan, thank you so much for taking the time today.
You're very welcome. I had so much fun. Thank you, Roshan.
Yeah, I hope this financial blueprint helps everyone get on the right path to financial freedom this year. I was speaking to Rajan Devadasan, licensed financial planner with Manulife Investment Management Malaysia Berhad and CEO of RD Wealth Creation. This was Ringgit & Sense, the show that's all about personal finance. If you've got any questions, queries, or suggestions, please get in touch at ringgit@bfm.my. Up next is the 10 a.m. News Bulletin and then Enterprise. I'm Roshan Kanesan, signing off for The Morning Run, BFM 89.9.
Ringgit and Sense on BFM 89.9, the business station. Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.